Hello, and welcome to Radio New Internationalist. Each week in this program, New Internationalists from around the world explore the people, the ideas, and the action in the fight for global justice. Chris Lang has been analysing the pulp sector for over 15 years and recommending ways to stop finance for environmental vandalism. Recently, he was part of a team of six non-government organisations asked to brief a meeting in Germany with about a dozen bankers from seven major banks in it. Set the scene for us, Chris. Where was this meeting? Who was there? And why was it being held?
There's a problem with that because we had the meeting under the Chatham House rule, which means that I can tell you what was said, but I can't tell you who said it, and I can't tell you who else was there.
Sounds interesting, Chris.
The meeting took place in one of the huge banks in Europe.
Did they serve good coffee?
Oh, yeah. It was great coffee. It was all highly luxurious, as you would expect in one of the biggest banks in Europe. You really got the feeling of a kind of David and Goliath atmosphere, in that there were these six NGOs talking to some of the biggest financiers in the world. The way we organized the meeting was that the NGOs gave a series of presentations. So during the meeting, that meant that the bankers heard of the problems that industrial tree plantations have caused in Indonesia. What I found very interesting was the promises that the pulp and paper industry gave 20 years ago before it started operating in Indonesia. The pulp industry was supposed to bring jobs, it was going to bring wealth to Indonesia, it was even supposed to be protecting the forests. And of course, 20 years later, there's massive deforestation as a result of these plantations. They provided very few jobs. Basically, the promises that the companies and the industry gave turned out to be a pack of lies. We basically described all the problems with the pulp and paper industry. We pointed out that the banks aren't doing sufficient due diligence in order to find out what the problems are before they finance these projects. And yet what the banks told us during and at the end of the meeting, what the banks told us was that we have to help them. There they are with budgets of billions of dollars, and they're telling us basically that they can't do proper due diligence on pulp and paper projects.
And you can, project. Of course, being very well funded.
Yeah, precisely.
So what was the reaction to that?
The meeting was actually quite constructive and it was very polite, as these things often are. And basically, what we were trying to do was convey to the banks that there is a serious problem here and that the banks do have a responsibility. They can't just continue funding an industry which is causing massive human rights problems, massive environmental problems. They can't just keep pretending that they don't have any role in this.
So how effective are existing standards for bankers to identify and avoid financing environmentally damaging projects?
One of the things that some of the banks said in the meeting was that, for example, if Euler Hermes, which is the German export credit guarantee agency, if they back a project, the bank said, well, then we'll finance it as well. So basically what the banks are doing is they're trying to look for someone else to do the due diligence for them. And once that has taken place, then they'll just get involved as well.
What do you make of that, Chris? I mean, is it that they don't want the environmentalists to point a finger at them later and say, you shouldn't have funded this, by being able to say, well, actually, we were told it was okay to actually do this? Or is it more that they are now entering an area of corporate social responsibility where they actually don't want to finance things that are going to be damaging to the environment?
My impression is that it's in order to avoid bad public relations. The whole corporate social responsibility thing is driven by public relations. The whole point of corporations is that they're there to make money. They're not charities. My feeling of this whole corporate social responsibility business is that companies are basically trying to say, oh, look, we're doing something in order to improve the situation, precisely to avoid stronger government regulation of
Which
of
will,
the industry.
Which will cut into their profits as they actually have to set up structures to conform with the regulations. You've just written a report, Banks, Pulp and People, a primer on upcoming international pulp projects. Give us a bit of an overview of how pulp production damages the environment.
There's several aspects of the production of pulp as the industry currently stands that are problematic. The first is that there's a massive reliance on wood as a raw material to produce pulp and paper. And increasingly, this wood is being sourced from enormous industrial tree plantations, which are being planted in the global south. These monocultures cover hundreds of thousands of hectares. They're planted purely to feed the pulp mill. So this means that a single company is effectively in control of a minimum of 100,000 hectares and often going into several hundred thousand hectares. Aracruz in Brazil, for example, has more than 250,000 hectares of monoculture tree plantations feeding its pulp mills. And these plantations are planted with extremely fast-growing trees. And one of the problems is that they require a huge amount of water in order to grow so fast. There's countless examples of where this has led to drying up of streams and springs. Local people have to dig their wells deeper in order to get water. In some places in Uruguay, they don't have a local water supply anymore. They have to wait for water to be delivered in trucks. And that's only happened since the whole area has been planted with eucalyptus plantations. Another problem is that often the plantations are planted on land that was previously forest. The forest is cleared and then it's replaced with a monoculture tree plantation to feed the pulp mill. This is particularly a serious problem in Sumatra in Indonesia, where WWF estimates that an area of something like 500,000 hectares of forest has been cleared to feed just Asia Pulp and Paper's pulp mill in Sumatra.
That's enormous.
A further problem is that often the justification for this whole development of the pulp industry is that it's going to provide jobs. In fact, when you look at the number of jobs provided, there's very few jobs provided in the pulp mill. And the jobs that are provided in the plantations are often extremely dangerous. They're often poorly paid. Workers' rights are very poorly respected. Often the work is contracted out, which means that workers have even fewer rights. What we've found in country after country is that after plantations are established, there's actually an increase in rural poverty. Far from it being development, this is actually making rural poverty worse than it was before.
And is it a case that because of the taking up of the environment through planting of plantations, that people's livelihoods, their farming, the way they actually got food and earned a living is disappearing as well, Chris?
Yeah, that's precisely what's happening.
This must be creating conflicts within communities. If you're taking away people's livelihoods, you're affecting their environment, it must be creating tensions within the areas in which these plantations are growing.
Yeah, that is one of the problems. Some of the members of the community manage to get a job in the plantation and others don't get a job and they find that they've lost their land.
So what was your sense, having a look at what was happening in pulp production around the world, Chris, what would you nominate as perhaps the worst area?
I try to think of what the worst area is, I always think, oh yeah, but somewhere else is even worse.
We were hearing a lot about the Amazon and parts of Asia, Chris. What about in the former Soviet Republic? What's happening there where they're desperate for economic industries of any kind?
Russia is one of the areas where the pulp industry is currently expanding. The reason it's doing so is because there are vast areas of forests there. If you think about it, these are in places like Siberia, where forests do not grow, trees do not grow particularly quickly. Difficult to imagine a colder area for growing trees. So the industry is effectively stripping these forests. And okay, it may be replanting, but for me, I just cannot get my head around how this can possibly be sustainable. They're replacing forests, have taken hundreds of years to grow. They're going to be replacing these with monocultures.
And what are the banks doing? Are the banks financing those kinds of projects?
Yeah, one of the interesting things about the pulp industry is that much of the financing isn't coming in the form of project financing. So in other words, the companies don't contact the banks and say, hey, we've got this great idea for a pulp mill. Do you want to give us some money? What happens instead is that they're raising the money by issuing shares and also as general corporate finance. For example, there are guidelines under the Equator Principles. Banks that have signed on to the Equator Principles have to agree with a set of standards. But the Equator Principles only applies to project financing. So that means the vast majority of financing that goes to the pulp industry isn't covered by the Equator Principles. Banks are financing pulp mills, for example, in Russia. You know, it's not necessarily directly where you can point at a bank and say, this bank is funding that pulp mill. The bank may have given money to the company, which the company is then using.
I'm wanting to go back into the meeting room, though, with big business. And I'm wondering...
I really wanted to say something. Right this week in Tasmania, the parliament is discussing whether or not to approve Gunns Pulp Mill in Tasmania. It's currently a wood chip company, Gunns, is trashing forests. It's basically just going in, cutting down the forest, clearing as much as it can, and currently it's wood chipping it and exporting it to Japan. And it now wants to build a pulp mill. And, you know, I'm sure in Australia you'll have heard a great deal more about it than we have in Europe. The astonishing thing to me is the way that Gunns, the company, appears to have a complete stranglehold over the democratic process in Tasmania. It's managed to withdraw its application through the state process because that was taking too long and because it looked like it may not get approved. It then convinced the Tasmanian government that what was needed was new regulation for approving pulp mills, which the Tasmanian government duly wrote with the help of the company's lawyers. To me, it's just staggering that this pulp company can have such a control over what should be a democratic process.
Staggering to us, Chris, and very interesting, I think, that you have said that it's staggering to you sitting in Germany as well, that this might be taking place in a part of the rich world.
To me, the question isn't how can we find sustainable pulp mills that the banks can finance. The question is how can we address the structural problems of the pulp and paper industry in order that we can avoid the environmental abuses and the human rights abuses that the industry is currently entangled with.
Touché. That was Chris Lang, formerly an architect, now an eco-warrior, who's just completed the report Banks, Pulp and People. Chris, where can people go to read it?
We've set up a website called Pulp Mill Watch, which is at www.pulpmillwatch.org. And you can download the report from there.
Fantastic, Chris.
Or I should actually say as well, the report was published by a German NGO called Urgewald. And yeah, you can get in touch with Urgewald or visit their website, which is at urgewald.de. But you'd have to read German, actually. The whole thing's in German.
If only, Chris. Good on you. Chris, good on you. Thank you very much for participating in today's program.
Okay, thanks very much.